But using psychology, I think that was one of the best things that I studied in college. Psychology is wonderful because you learn to know children and you learn to know things that way. But I think parents should teach their children sex at home. That's the place to teach them. But some of them make fun of sex, which isn't right. Sex is a wonderful thing. It's a human thing. And it's a wonderful thing when it's done right. But when it's done wrong, it's altogether wrong. It's against the Bible, it's against the teachings of God and everything else. But sex is a wonderful thing as far as the sex when it's done right. But if it's not done right, well then, of course, that's another thing. A lot of men will be hellish to a woman, you know, because when they turn against them, or they'll be as hellish as they can. And that ruins a wife's her health and everything. And but so many men is that way. But that was one thing. Roy wasn't too mean to me when I filed. If he had tried to use sex, he might have been mean, but he wasn't because the lawyer told me not to let him touch me anymore. After you file a suit, well, then you don't dare to let him touch you. But they were so surprised that I filed suit against him. They thought, being a Christian, I would never do that. But I showed them, and I went ahead with a lot more, and I was going to file suit against a lot of them that caused trouble because why should I have to be put up with all that? And they wouldn't even let my children have any food that day. Now, that was harm. And they can all say what they want to. But that's the only time that they ever went kind of hungry. But Marilyn, I don't know whether somebody fed the boys at school or not. I don't know. They never told me if they ever did. But we didn't have anything to fix for their dinner even the day they went to school. So I didn't know. And another thing, then Roy stopped me at getting groceries at the store on time, you see. I didn't realize that. If I'd have been a little bit smarter, I wouldn't have got a lot of groceries beforehand. I wasn't smart enough for that. So you never know what. A lawyer will tell one to do something and the other will do something. That's the way they do even today. They do everything they can against one another. And, oh, I don't know. It's not right. I never wanted a divorce, but then I wasn't going to put up with what I had to. Because like I say, I would give anything on earth if we could move far away to begin with. We never had a bit of trouble. And he was so good to me when we first married. He was good as gold to me when we first married. But he did tell me, he said I was the dumbest thing he ever saw. I said, well, maybe some of these women you had anything to do with, they probably knew everything. I said, I don't know nothing.
Well, Anita, were you involved in any kind of activities outside the home when you were married and living on the farm?
Well, I went to the Ladies' Aid.
What was that?
Well, that's when a group of women would meet and they'd sew and make quilt tops. And if anybody wanted anything made, like clothes, why, they'd help them make clothes. And we'd have a food, you know, every meal. That is, at the luncheon. And then, let's see, what other activities? Anything concerning church, we had the children's program about once a summer, and we had the Christmas program. We had things going on at school, but it was similar to PTA, but they didn't call it that. We'd meet, you know, and they'd have box socials, and I can't think of very much else.
What about your mother? Did she have outside activities? Had she had outside activities?
No, I think her life there at the store was helping at the store and taking care of the family and cooking and things like that. She belonged to the folks all belonged to Masons, and she belonged to the Blue Star. No, it's not the Blue Star, but it's the Eastern Star. All of them belonged to the Eastern Star but me. The men and the women, all of them, my sisters and mother and sisters-in-laws all belonged to Eastern Star, and all the men folks belonged to Masons, and they all belonged to Eastern Star. Well, I was the only one, but I would have joined the Eastern Star if there'd been any Eastern Star near me, but I wanted Roy to join the Mason, that's my husband, but he didn't join it, but his brother did. His brother asked me to get a divorce from Roy, even when I went back that one time. He asked me to get a divorce from Roy, and he'd marry me. I said, well, Jake, I said, if I'd have met you before I met Roy, or met him, I said, it might have been different, but I said, I wanted Roy, Jake, and I said, I've always been true to him, and I said, I just don't want to get a divorce, because he said Roy didn't treat me right. That's the time he wanted to put his insurance in my name. Well, another thing, he had insurance for about $2,000, I think it was, his mother objected to Jake getting married because she didn't want the new, if he'd have married, she would have got the insurance, and his mother wouldn't let him get married, and he never was married. And that's not right, but then that's the way people work, you know. But his mother had influence over him that way. Jake was a good guy, though, and Jake and I would never have any trouble because anything that I wanted to do, Jake would go. Now, just like Jordan and Mason, I had to laugh when I come home. I thought to myself, well, I didn't know, even if I had got a divorce, I wasn't too sure whether Jake would have married me then, because you wasn't sure. Now, I'm not like some women. I wouldn't take that. I just took for granted what was said. But I told him plain. I said, well, Jake, if I'd have met you beforehand, but Jake always acted like he took my part at home. I could always see that at home, that he always seemed to take my part, but I never dared to say anything, because Lloyd would have been, oh, he'd have been jealous all get out. And if I'd have ever told him that Jake said to me, why, that would have been bad, too. But I kept that to myself, which I'm glad I did. But I told my sister-in-law when I was back there that Jake wanted to marry him. She didn't have to think about it.
I forgot to ask you to tell me about when you had the flu. You said that you had the flu during the epidemic in
1918.
And I'd like you to tell that story on the tape.
Well, during that winter, that was the year I was a senior.
In high school?
In high school, and I was in 1918, and several of us got the influenza, they call it influenza, and the one girl in my class passed away during the winter. Well, then another boy in my class had it the same time I did. We both had it bad. Well, they didn't think he was going to live, and they didn't think I was going to live because I was in a coma for 2 weeks, and I lost 24 pounds from the time for those 2 weeks. And then when I come to, well, I was up for a couple of days, and I was so bound determined I didn't want to miss school. So they let me go back to school. Well, then I took cold because they didn't have enough fuel to keep the building warm, and I missed school another 2 weeks. And after that, then I was better from the flu. But let's see, there's something I was going to say before that. What was it? That there were so many strong people that died during that time. In the fall was 1918, and I graduated in 1919 in the spring, you see. And I lived with, oh, I know how it was. Well, the day I took sick, our class got up and debated whether women should vote. That was women's suffrage. Mm-hmm. Another boy in my class and I, we were for the women to vote. And when I got up in front of the class to give my side of the debate, they said they never saw anybody give such a good debate as I did. I couldn't tell you to this day a word that I said. And several of them said they thought I was going to die right up there on the floor facing them. And they said I was such a good debater, and what I said, I told them afterwards, I said, I didn't know a thing I said. I had all planned, you know, had studied and planned. And so then when I went to my seat, my co-worker, he says I had to give a rebuttal. I said, I can't get up there again. I said, I'm just too sick. So he had to give a rebuttal. Well, anyway, they voted for us to win. I don't know why, whether they voted because it was good or whether it was because I was so sick. So then the teacher come back to me. He says, Juanita, you have to leave. He says, you have the flu, and he said, you give it to everybody else here if you don't leave me. And I said, I don't know what to do. I said, my mother told me not to go into my brother's. And because they had the flu, and so he said, well, Juanita, you have to leave. So I started down the stairway. So the domestic teacher, she said, Juanita, wait a minute, I'll give you some tea. So she gave me some tea, and as I went out the door to my classmates, to the boys, they was at the door, and they did me goodbye because they didn't know whether I was going to come back or not. So they gave me goodbye. I said, oh, I'll see you again. That's the way I answered. So I started to walk down to my brother's. He lived about as far from here to Lakewood Boulevard, about that distance all I had to walk. So I went to the first house I could that had a telephone, and Mama told me not to go in at my brother's, so I stopped there and asked the lady if she'd telephone to my mother and ask her what I was supposed to do. So they finally got through to my mother, and she said, you tell Juanita to go in at my brother's and that they would send the doctor right away. Well, when I went down to my brother's, I knocked on the door. And I said, Calvin, I'm awful sick. So he gave me, I guess it was, I don't know, it was Epsom salt, but he gave me something for bowel movement, you know. So he gave me some kind of medicine, so I drank that down. And I said, now, Mom told me not to come in because I don't think I got the flu. And I said, I don't want to get it. So he kind of laughed, and I said, I'll go out and lay in the buggy till we find out what Mom says. So then when the neighbor got Mama, she come down and told my brother. Well, but before the neighbor got there, I walked out to the buggy. We had one of those closed buggies. I went to get in the buggy. I couldn't make it. I fell back on the straw. And I laid there a while till finally I come to my senses, I guess. I think I was out of my head part of the time. But anyway, I come to my senses, and I got up, and I walked back to the house. And when the time I got there, the neighbor had told Calvin to take me in. And so Calvin said, he said, we need to come on in. I stepped inside the door. That's the last I knew for 2 weeks. So they put me to bed and got Mama's half-sister to come and take care of me. And they threw a woolen blanket over me. That was help too, you know. And I laid there for those 2 weeks. Then when I come to within 2 weeks, my aunt was laying on the bed beside of me, and she was snoring so bad. That was the funniest sound that anybody could ever hear. That was the first sound I heard, was my aunt snoring. I yelled at my brother. I said, Calvin, what on earth is that noise? I said, I can't stand that noise. So he said, laugh. He said, well, it's Aunt Rosie was her name. He said, she's snoring. He said, she's been so losing sleep over me. But both day and night, they had to watch me, you know. And so she was just snoring so loud, so he woke her up. And I looked and saw that blanket. I said, where did this come from? I said, I don't have a blanket. I don't belong to me. And they said, well, it was theirs. They said, Calvin said, well, they threw it over me. It's been over me ever since I was sick. So then from that time on, then I began to eat a little bit. I don't know how they fed me or anything in the between time. But then I was thankful to go back to school. But I was sick then for 2 more weeks down with my brothers. And my sister-in-law lost her baby. Now, lots of the women that were pregnant lost their babies at that time. And people that were strong. Now, the boy that was in my class that was so strong, like I felt like I was so strong, we both almost died. And the girl that died, she was pretty strong, too. But there was a lot of them that did come out of it, but they was weak after that. And but when I went back to school, and they seen that I'd lost 24 pounds, they couldn't believe it. In those 2 weeks, I lost 24 pounds because my brother made me get on the scales. He put me on the scales when I went in, and then they weighed me when I come to. They got me up on the scale somehow. I don't know how they did, but they said they never saw anything like it. They knew I'd lost some. And some of the kids would go home, and they said, boy, Juanita must have been awful sick, said she was so thin. I was so heavy. I was always heavy most of the time. And so I didn't get much schooling. I think I got about 2 months in that last year of schooling, but they passed me anyhow. So I graduated. Oh, goodness me. But there were so many that missed so much of the time. You know, they'd start up and have school, and then so many of them would be out. And then they'd have school some more, and some more of them would be out. And they had flu all winter. There was always some flu all winter. But we was, the one girl was the only one that died, but some of us had it awful bad.
You said that you were debating about suffrage the day that you got sick. Mm-hmm. You
were real
aware then of the suffrage movement.
And oh, yeah.
And what was your mother also aware of it? And what were the feelings around suffrage?
Well, lots of them were for it. Many of them were for because they wanted the women to vote. Because they said that things would change if they get women in to vote. Now, that was their attitude. But that wouldn't make any difference with my mother because she never told us how we have to vote, but that was my own viewpoint on it, you know, because I thought, well, heck, why shouldn't we vote? We ought to be able to. But anyway, because in the debate, though, the others might have been for it, too, but they had to be against it, you know, that is, they had to be on the opposite side.
Was there activity around your town to encourage the vote for women?
Well, among themselves, when they would meet or something like that, I think that they would talk about it. Now, just like with politics, they would talk. But we were Republicans, so we don't know too much what the Democrats said among themselves, because most of them around were Republicans at that time. Now, one trustee, when I went to common school, he was a Democrat. But the folks never said too much about politics. And with religion, we went to the Methodist Church because that was the nearest church to us, while the folks lived near the United Brethren Church, and they belonged to the United Brethren, but they didn't object to what church we went to, as long as we went to church. But we had to go to church regardless of anything, which we didn't care. We liked it because we enjoyed those things, because that's all we had to enjoy, you might say. And then we had reunions. We had a lot of reunions, and that was always a happy time for us. That was after I was married, too. We'd go back to our reunions. I got to go to Ohio one time to my father's reunion. He wasn't living, but the relatives of my father. That was the only time I was ever in Ohio. And, my mother never said too much about politics. We would talk about, I would hear them talk about if somebody was coming up for whatever they was coming up for, or something like that. When my little girl, the oldest daughter, was born, that was in 1924, and my husband's people were, they were very strong Democrats, very strong. And they kind of hated me because they couldn't make me change my affiliation. I just, what I marked down, I marked down what I want to, and I had a right to, so. The more they said, the more I was determined to keep my, that was what I went and voted for, I'd keep it down, you know. Well, anyway, my husband was so thrilled to think I wasn't going to get the vote for the president that time. Now I can't think who was running in 1924. It wasn't Wilson. I can't think who was the president that time. But anyway, the day,
why were you going to get the vote then?
I was in bed with my baby. I just had a new baby. And they kept me in bed about 12 days, 10 days or 12 days, usually about 12 or 13 days. But I think it was on about the 12th day, so I got up that day because I was going to go vote, because one of the people said they'd take me to the voting place and I could vote. Well, I didn't know I'd gone. Oh, God, I ought to kept my mouth shut. But that was one thing. I couldn't keep still on things, you know, because I knew he was so thrilled to think that he got the vote and I didn't. And his folks was laughing so about it before I had the baby, you know. And they was having a high old time that I didn't break Roy's vote. Well, anyway, when I come home that night at the supper table, I says, well, I got the vote for my first president. He jumped out of that chair at the table. I thought he was going to hit me for saying that. He was that angry. Now, I was surprised. That was the first time that he ever showed his temper to me. But he was really angry over that. Well, the woman that took care of us, she was there, and she was sitting at the table at the same time. She said she never saw anybody that got so angry. Well, she had to be a Republican, too. That was relevant, too. But anyway, she said she never imagined that Roy would ever have such a temper. Well, I said I never knew it either, but I said his girlfriend told me one time he had such a temper, but I never believed because I'd never seen it before. But he was really angry enough to, if nobody had been there, I believe he'd have struck me then. But that's the only time, besides the time I got the money, found the money where he'd had it hid. But, then from that time on, that made it worse for me, you see. He wasn't as kind to me from that time on. Well, his folks would make fun about it, you know. They laughed and said, well, your vote didn't count anything. I said, why didn't it count? I said, he had a right to go vote his way and I had a right to go mine. I said, why aren't the votes counted that way? And they said, well, if you break whenever you go vote against anybody, like you break his vote. I said, well, I never heard of that before, but I said, I always learn something new every day. So I got the vote anyhow. After that, I voted all the time I could ever vote. Nothing ever kept me from voting. Yeah, I don't want to lose my vote to this day. I could vote for a Democrat if I want to. If I think they're better than the other guy, I'd vote for him, because I didn't tell anybody else that, but I'll keep my way I got it, you know, I'll keep it, because I don't change over. But that was kind of funny to me. I had to laugh about it afterwards, and I laughed to the lady. I said, gee, I said, I didn't think he'd get so mad at me, but he was really angry. Then when he'd go out and tell his folks, the first time I'd go out there, they blew their top because I voted Republican. I said, how do you know I voted Republican? I said, you didn't see me vote. Well, they said, well, I said you did. I said, well, supposing he said so. I said, that's no sure sign that I did. Well, they said, then why are you ashamed of it? I said, I'm not ashamed of the way I vote. Now, that's the way they talk, you know. And anybody would change over, then they made all manner of fun of them for changing, you see. Oh, they was really mean. And why, I don't know, why they were so hellish on their way. You know, we had a superintendent and he was put in for by the Republicans. Well, you know, some of the Democrats went against him, and they claimed that he was taking little boys out, using them like sodomy or things like that. I never heard tell of that word till then. So I had to ask Roy if he knew what sodomy was. I said, explain it to me. What do they do? And he said, well, he didn't know. I said, well, I want to find out. So I don't know who I did ask. I had to ask somebody because what in the world sodomy meant. That's why Sodom and Gomorrah were such hellish things. But now you see that in the paper quite often now about it. But that hurt that guy worse than anything on earth. It really ruined his reputation. But he did take little boys home with him, but the little boys never said anything or never told on him if he ever used them. Some said, well, they could let him use them, or that he could use either their rectum or else they could suck him off or something. I don't know what it is. To this day, I'm not too sure. But anyway, people were hurt over it, you know, to think that they fitted Gee. He was such a good superintendent, and then to do things like that, it leaves a bad impression with people. Well, one day then I met him on the street. He was coming down the street, and he seemed so thrilled to speak to me. He spoke to me, and I didn't speak. I'll never forget the look on that man's face, and from this day on, I said, I'll never hold things against a person unless I knew for sure about things, because that hurt me as bad as it did him. You could tell from his face that it hit him, because I wouldn't even speak to him. I just walked right by and not said a word. And that hurt me, too, because I thought to myself, well, he could have been the most innocent man anybody could be. But after it wasn't all Democrats. They're not all alike. We have bad ones in Republicans as well as anything else. But that's one thing that I've always felt bad to think that I didn't even speak to the guy, and I never saw him after that. But that kind of killed him. I think he died from worrying about the way people treated him. I didn't mistreat him, the only thing I didn't speak to him. But even not speaking, I walked right past him as if I never seen him. But that hurt me. I expect as bad as it did him, but that really taught me a lesson to be awful careful to think that somebody may be guilty when they're not guilty. Now, I was on two juries, and you know you've got to take a long time if you accuse a person of being guilty. When some of them will get up and lie like troopers against the guilt, against the innocent one, that you don't know for sure, and boy, that means something to me. I served on two juries, but I hanged both juries, the head guy, the foreman, and I hanged the jury. That way I don't be accused of sending somebody to jail or something like that. Oh, goodness. So.
Juanita, you said that you moved to California because of your husband's health.
Mm-hmm. And my daughter's health, youngest daughter's health.
Okay. What year was that?
1942.
And all your children were born by then?
Oh, yeah. Marilyn was born in 36, Lowell in 27. And in 28, and Vernon was in 27, and Eileen in 24. And Eileen graduated from Noblesport High School in 1924, just before we come out here. And I think Marilyn was in her first grade when we come out here, if I remember right, because I think she went to the Willard. I believe it was Willard. I think it was Willard.
Can you tell me about your move to California? What precipitated it?
Oh, well, during that year during the war, Roy was having so much trouble with asthmatic attacks and his sinuses that I was afraid that he wouldn't live through that winter. And so I coaxed him. That was one thing. I coaxed him. I said, you go try another climate and see if it'll help you. I said, I don't think you'll pull through another year. Well, he listened to me for some reason. That was one time he listened to me. And I says, well, why don't you go out to California? I've got two sisters and at that time a late brother-in-law out here. And I says, why don't you take Eileen, that was in the fall, I said, take Eileen and go out there and see if you can get a job and get a place for us to live and have us to come out. I've always wanted to go to California. I said, we don't have to sell the place, we can keep the place yet. And so I said, then you go out and try to see if you can get a job. Well, thank goodness I persuaded him to do that. That's one time that they didn't want him to come, some of them didn't, but anyway, he listened to me that time. So he brought Eileen along with him, and that was her 18th week of her 18th birthday. And I says, well, that would be a birthday gift for her by getting to come out on the plane, on the train. None of the children never rode on a train before. So he came on out, and he went to where my sisters were. They had an apartment, and then they worked at different places, but they kept an apartment. So Eileen and Roy went there. Well, then the next day, I forget what day the 18th was, that week of the 18th. Anyway, Roy went over to Shipyards right away, and he got a job. Well, then he got a room over in Wilmington. So then he left Eileen with my sister and brother-in-law. And then he wrote back, and he said, start to sell off the things. He says, I've got a job, and he says, I think I'll be able to get a place. No, I think he first went to see about a house. Well, the woman wanted $90 a month and wanted to take out half the furniture. He says, well, that made him angry, and my brother-in-law says, well, Roy, why don't you go buy a place? Well, he's always wanted to come west, and now why don't you buy a place? Because she helps to make the living and everything, helps to do what she can. So he was persuaded to come over here. This house and one house on O'Carroll was the only two vacant houses. So my brother-in-law gave money to my husband, $400, to pay down on the house. And another party had bargained for the house, but they hadn't paid down on it, and then they found out that they did not work for the government. This was all government workers that got homes in here at that time. Well, anyway, Roy had the job, so he was eligible. So he paid down on the house, but the other people had never moved in. So Roy, we were the first one to move in. So then Roy wrote back, or sent me a telegram. He said, start to sell off the stuff. He said, I found a place that said they wanted too much money, but I said, as soon as I have time, I think I'll be able to find a place for you to live. And he said, to start to sell off everything and come out. And he told me then what to do about don't get off the train and leave the children in one place and the dog or everything. But he said, sometimes they'll take part of the train off to take on the service people. And he'd warned me about that beforehand. So then, just as soon as I got that notice that I could go ahead and sell the stuff, I jumped in the car and go to the auctioneer. I said, how soon can you, that was on Friday, I said, how soon can you have a complete sale? I said, I want to sell everything, so I want to go to California, and I got to get out there before my husband changes his mind. And he laughed. He said, well, I can't have it before the following Tuesday. I said, okay, I'll have it put in the paper. So Saturday, Friday evening, the evening paper, no, the Saturday morning come out in the paper. But it said that I was going to meet my husband out there, because I had to say something, because calling for divorce beforehand, people didn't know, you know. And I said that I was going to meet my husband in California. So on Saturday morning then, I had told the people who I was working. I was working on these tanks for the planes at Logansport, Indiana. And that was government work. So I had told the people, I said, my husband's gone out west. And I said, he may send word to me to come out there. And I said, I'd like to go as soon as he lets me know. So on Saturday noon, Saturday morning I went, I said, well, I'm going to leave on the following Tuesday. And I said, could I have everything straightened up here? So they got my check and everything that they owed me by noon on Saturday. So I cashed that in. And then I took a box home, and I put in everything I could in a big box. And then on Monday I went out to where my husband had some money put in a bank. And he'd written to me so I would have a notification that I could get the money out by his letter. So I went out and got that money, and we didn't know any debts. That was one thing. I didn't know any debts. So then on Tuesday morning, it started to snow. Well, a lot of folks come and helped me to get all the stuff ready to sell. So when the mailman come, here come a telegram. Don't you come till we notify you. A lot of them said, Juanita, what you going to do? My mother said, go on, Juanita. Said, you better go while you got a chance. I said, well, I'm going, Mom. I said, you know, I got my tickets ready. And I said, I'm going whether I sell everything or not. I said, I'm leaving. I said, I got to get Marilyn out here, and she's going to die with that croup. She had croup so badly. So they laughed. Some of them laughed. Oh, his folks, they didn't want me to go. And just as soon as everything was sold, I told the sale crier and the auctioneer and his secretary, whoever takes care of the money and everything, I said, give me enough checks or give me enough money just in case if I'd be laid over anywhere that I'd have enough that I can get out west. Well, they give me as much as I asked for. And I said, then when you get straightened up, and I said, if any checks bounces, I said, take care of it, take care of everything. And I said, everybody has to take everything off the place because nobody's there to take care of anything. So when I told them the boss, they'd have to take it off the place. So then my brother took me into town. Well, I took the checks one place, and they wouldn't cash them. So then I had to go to another place, and I told him, I said, well, you know my husband people out here, and I said, you know us. I said, we don't owe you anything, and I said, we have a little farm here at home, and I said, if you do cash the checks and any of them bounces, I said, all you need to do is let me know, and I said, we'll see that they're taken care of, because I said, as long as we keep our place back here, that'll be security for them. And they knew that, so they gave me the money for the money of that. So then my brother got to the station, and the man said, you had to get a box to put the little dog in. Well, my brother had to run out real quick and get a box, and it was a little bit tight for the poor dog. I felt bad about that, because we didn't understand we had to put him in a box, put it in a box. So she stayed in that darn old box for all those 3 days we was on the train. And they tormented her and everything else. I never saw anything like it. But they wouldn't let us in where they kept her, like in a caboose, I guess you call it. I guess baggage place, like a caboose was on the train.